Welcome to My Cousin Jane, a podcast about Jane Austen and her works, with your host, Lee Phelan. Hey everybody, welcome back to My Cousin Jane. So today we're going to be going through Persuasion Chapter 6, and this chapter has some really funny writing, some of my favorite writing in terms of irony and wit in the book. Because in this chapter, Anne is thrust into this kind of ironic mediator role between the two big families in Uppercross. We have Charles Musgrove and his wife Mary, who's Anne's sister, in one house with their family, and then Charles's parents with their two younger daughters in another house. And as we learn in this chapter, they don't always get along, but they're kind of on this like superficial niceties level where they like each other enough, but they're kind of like critical of one another behind the scenes. And there's just some funny social commentary that happens in this chapter that we'll talk about. But one of the first things I want to talk about is the Musgrove family, their daughters. They start thinking, you know, their interest in Kinnich Hall is pretty minimal. They like Anne, but they don't really like anyone else in the family. But they really are caught by this idea of maybe we should go to Bath on holiday as well. But they're concerned about where they would stay in the city. And so they start talking to their father about this. And we're going to listen to a little clip. And once again, all of our audio clips come from the talented Karen Savage, who has done these recordings for LibriVox and put these into the public domain. So here are the thoughts about where to stay in Bath.
I hope we shall be in Bath in the winter. But remember, Papa, if we do go, we must be in a good situation. None of your Queen Squares for us.
So Queen Square was an architectural development built in the 1700s by John Wood the Elder. He was a famous architect who most of his famous stuff was done in Bath, and he had a son, John Wood the Younger, who continued his work after his father died. But Queen Square is a set of square-shaped terrace houses, what we would call townhouses in the United States. And Jane Austen actually lived there with her brother in 1799. But while she was there, she mentions in a letter to her sister that she would find it more pleasant to be near the Sydney Gardens. The Sydney Gardens are on the other side of the River Avon in Bath. And the Sydney Gardens had a labyrinth, they had fireworks displays, different shows, all kinds of fun little walks and stuff and displays and events that would happen. Kind of a really fashionable center of Bath in this time period. And Jane Austen does eventually live over there in 1801. She lives at Sydney Place. So maybe, we don't know exactly what the Miss Musgroves were thinking when they said, we want to be in a good situation rather than being in Queen Square. Because Queen Square was a pretty nice place, and it still is. But perhaps they wanted to be closer to the Sydney Gardens. And in fact, the Lady Dalrymple, when she comes to Bath, and we learn about her later in the book, she stays at Laurel Place, which is on the same side of the river as Sydney Gardens, well within walking distance. So now we kind of get into this back and forth between Mrs. Musgrove and Mary, talking to Anne about each other's problems, each presenting their own side of the story. And Anne tends to side with Mrs. Musgrove because Anne realizes that Mary tends to see things kind of as a kind of ill-used hypochondriac point of view. And so we're going to talk about two of the things that are discussed. The first has to do with house servants.
She had this communication, moreover, from Mary. Mrs. Musgrove thinks all her servants so steady that it would be high treason to call it in question. But I am sure, without exaggeration, that her upper housemaid and laundry maid, instead of being in their business, are gadding about the village all day long. I meet them wherever I go, and I declare I never go twice into the nursery without seeing something of them. If Jemima were not the trustiest, steadiest creature in the world, it would be enough to spoil her, for she tells me they are always tempting her to take a walk with them. And on Mrs. Musgrove's side it was, I make a rule of never interfering in any of my daughter-in-law's concerns, for I know it would not do. But I shall tell you, Miss Anne, because you may be able to set things to rights, that I have no very good opinion of Mrs. Charles's nursery maid. I hear strange stories of her. She is always upon the gad, and from my own knowledge I can declare she is such a fine-dressing lady that she is enough to ruin any servant she comes near. Mrs. Charles quite swears by her, I know, but I just give you this hint that you may be upon the watch, because if you see anything amiss, you need not be afraid of mentioning it.
So servants in Regency and Victorian times, they had ranks just like the aristocracy and everyone else. Today, we're just going to talk about the ladies' ranks. We had the housekeeper who was in charge of everybody. And then below her we had the ladies' maids. Now, technically, the ladies' maids were autonomous. They didn't have to listen to the housekeeper, but they ranked below her. And the ladies' maids were generally appointed by the lady of the house. Each lady chose her own maid, and they would help her with dressing and things specific to the care of that lady. And then we had the upper housemaids and the under housemaids, sometimes called the lower housemaids. Now, upper and lower here denotes rank, not location within the house. The upper housemaids got the nicer chores, decorating, arranging curtains, things like that. The under housemaids kind of got the less pleasant jobs, such as cleaning and scrubbing and things that had to be done throughout the house, emptying chamber pots, things like that. And then below them, we had the kitchen maids who assisted the cook. And then we had, in some places, we had dairy maids, depending on if you were in a rural area or in the town. The dairy maids were in charge of, as the name implies, the dairy. And then the nursery maid or nursemaids. Now, there was a nurse who was the primary guardian of the children. But then we also had a nursemaid who basically did all of the housekeeping in the nursery related to the children. And the nursemaids would often sometimes take the children on walks and things like that. And then below everyone, we have the scullery maid who does all the really hard work, the dirty work that nobody else wants to do. Now, each of these ranks had requirements for dress and privileges that went with them. For example, the ladies' maids would often get kind of hand-me-downs from the ladies that they serve. But everyone else had specific uniforms they were supposed to wear. And so if you had a nursery maid who was dressing in fine clothes, that was way outside of what the servant ranks would allow. And so this was, in Mrs. Musgrove's eyes, a big problem. Meanwhile, most of the maids weren't really supposed to be out of the house unless they were on holiday. They had a certain days off. But Mary is worried that the housemaids of Uppercross are always trying to, quote, corrupt Jemima, her nursery maid, and they shouldn't have been out of the house that often, is kind of her concern. And so just some interesting sort of upstairs, downstairs kind of differences between the different ranks. And then our final thing we want to talk about today is another kind of concern shared by the people of the upper house, this time the Miss Musgroves, talking to Anne and Mary, who are concerned about Mary taking the place of Mrs. Musgrove. So let's listen to that clip.
Again, it was Mary's complaint that Mrs. Musgrove was very apt not to give her the precedence that was her due when they dined at the great house with other families, and she did not see any reason why she was to be considered so much at home as to lose her place. And one day, when Anne was walking with only the Musgroves, one of them, after talking of rank, people of rank, and jealousy of rank, said, "I have no scruple of observing to you how nonsensical some persons are about their place, because all the world knows how easy and indifferent you are about it. But I wish anybody could give Mary a hint that it would be a great deal better if she were not so very tenacious, especially if she would not be always putting herself forward to take place of Mama. Nobody doubts her right to have precedence of Mama, but it would be more becoming in her not to be always insisting on it. It is not that Mama cares about it in the least in the world, but I know it is taken notice of by many persons."
All right, so when a family went to a dinner party at somebody else's house, there was a certain order in which they would enter the dining room. And this order was based on precedence or rank. John Trussler, who is an English clergyman, he wrote a number of books that were pretty influential during this time period. And he wrote a book called The Honors of the Table, or Rules for Behavior During Meals and the Whole Art of Carving. And in this book, he talks about the order and the kind of the method by which people should enter dining rooms, how meals should be served, how roasts and fowls should be carved at table, and even goes on to talk about the proper way to go to a market and how to pick good food, all the rules of polite society basically related to mealtime. And in this book, he says, so I'm going to quote from this, he says, "In all public companies, precedence is attended to, and particularly at table. Women have here always taken place of men, and both men and women have sat above each other according to the rank they bear in life. Where a company is equal in point of rank, married ladies take place of single ones, and older ones of younger ones. When dinner is announced, the mistress of the house requests the lady first in rank and company to show the way to the rest and walk first in the room where the table is served. She then asks the second in precedence to follow, and after all the ladies are passed, she brings up the rear herself. The master of the house does the same with the gentleman. And now here's the point that's kind of really talked about here in this audio clip we listened to. He goes on to say, among persons of real distinction, the marshalling of the company is unnecessary. Every woman and every man present knows his rank and precedence and takes the lead without any direction from the mistress or the master. And so everyone should know what order they enter the dining room. And everyone probably knows that technically Mary Musgrove outranks Mrs. Musgrove because Mary is the daughter of a baronet. But it's considered kind of rude by the Miss Musgroves, by the daughters, that Mary insists on this, that she rushes forward to take the lead, especially in such a small town as Uppercross, a small little country place. And they consider this to be a bit rude, even though technically it's Mary's right to do it. And Mary, on the other hand, feels a little slighted that why should she have to give place to Mrs. Musgrove, even if they're just dining at home with friends? It just doesn't seem right. She's the ranking lady in the place because she's the daughter of a baronet. So once again, we kind of see this obsession with rank, the Elliot pride that Mary has inherited is discussed over and over again in the book. And this will come up in a couple of other places, rank and precedence and its importance. Jane Austen's witty criticism of this practice during this time period. All right, so that's about all the time we have today. I hope you enjoyed this behind-the-scenes, deleted-scenes sort of look at Persuasion Chapter 6. Next time, we'll be talking about Persuasion Chapter 7. Thanks so much for tuning in today. If you'd like to help support the show, please head over to leefalen.com/mycousinjane, sign up for our newsletter, or click on the little donate button. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Thanks for listening.